Blog Talk Radio.
African Adamean Scriptures. I'm Charles, and I'm the host of this program. And tonight we're doing a special Purim episode. Purim is a celebration, a civil celebration for Yehudians and Yisraelim, Israelites, to commemorate the day in which disaster was averted, genocide plotted by the natural enemy of our people at that time, which was a relative, oddly enough, by an Amalekite named Haman, who was offended one day by a certain Judean named Mordecai, who would not bow down and worship him as he was accustomed, as an aristocrat and close advisor to the king Ahasuerus. And he had decided that he would destroy not just that particular man, but he would destroy the entire nation of Yehudians living amongst the Parsi, the Persians. And he used a technique in Hoderi astrology called casting of lots, which is what Purim means in Parsi. He applied that technique to divine the destruction, the destruction. And Yahweh, gave him the answer when it was the best time for him to attempt such an objective. However, the success was not guaranteed. So he got that answer with the full moon in Virgo in the month of Pisces, which is the month of the Virgin, the Betula. And the king Ahasuerus sought out virgins, which he had gathered 400 in number. And you can go into these numbers and these star signs, and we'll find so much symbolism here in this text. We usually cover words to help our members of our group to gain a better understanding on the theosophy and the philosophy of the ancient Hebrews, and how they understood the world and how they understood the deities. But today we're going to take time out to take notice of this particular day of commemoration. This is a holiday. Well, it's not a holiday for one day. It's a holiday for 3 days. And these are the 3 days that the full moon is in Virgo, which is so. This is the day of strength, and we are commemorating it during this particular time because this is when the moon is strongest in Virgo. It's actually when it's in during the month of Pisces. It's interesting to note in Joseph Bar Matthias' version here in the Antiquities of the Yehudim, book 11, chapter 6, verse 5, number 209. I'm sorry, start at 211. It says Haman was naturally an enemy to the Yehudim because the nation of the Amalekites, of which he was descended, had been destroyed by them, that is the Yehudim. Let's get on that natural enemy. These guys are relatives. They come from a similar bloodline, close bloodline. Two brothers, Yaqub and Esau. And Mordecai recognized Haman as a natural enemy because of the long-standing legal feud between the two. Now, these people were not broken down, brainwashed like people like the black man in diaspora is today, who doesn't know who his friends and enemies are, doesn't know up from down, left from right, you know, east from west and whatnot. So these people know how to act, know how to behave. You read chapter 3, verse 7 of the book of Esther. It says, Haman did the practice of, he cast lots every day for 12 months until he got his answer. These people are dedicated to winning. And I'm looking at this process, contrasting and comparing to how we are functioning in our society today. And what we have failed to acknowledge that we're not dedicated to our own survival. On the African Knowledge Building Book Club, that's going to be our opening section and introduction of the United Independent Compensatory Code System Workbook for Thought, Speech, and or Action for Victims of Racism and White Supremacy. We're opening with survival. And these people, this feast day of Purim is about survival. The Hanukkah is about survival. We were fighting empires. Hanukkah was more desperate than this particular situation. Well, some may argue that Purim was more desperate. And in a way, I would kind of lean more toward the Purim one because they had the gal that was going to mass exterminate them. Whereas in the Maccabean scenario, the plan was a mass extermination or enslavement. You could argue that they were going to take away the Torah from the people, so you can consider that the same thing, and I would agree. However, the point is, man, there are a lot of lessons here for men and women. There's a completely parallel line of thought for we can discuss women's matters, women's issues, women being able to use their power to affect change and participate on a grand scale in altering the destiny of humanity or our people. And I think some of our women could really take this particular subject and go with it and teach on that. That'd be really awesome if that would be done. Okay, this Haman guy, he was really working at it. He did not waste his time, and he worked every day until his plan suddenly became unraveled. Now, the Judeans were celebrating Pesach at the very moment that this wicked man Haman had plotted to, at least got his answer. He got an answer in the 12th month. So the following month, the month of Pesach, is Haman approached the king Ahasuerus with the proposal that he would give him a bunch of money, make a large donation into the royal treasury for the purpose of facilitating the genocide of the Judeans. He paid a large sum of money to the king to give him the ability to carry this out. So he put his money where his mouth is. He did his horary practice of casting lots so he can determine when the most favorable time to conduct such an enterprise, and he went for it. Everything else in this book is the intrigue of how the event would, all events would unfold, and how Haman would basically be undone when it has a happy ending. But the happy ending is a war. There is fighting. All of them have wars at the end. Pesach, you have a war. People have escaped and they're fighting their way out of Egypt. You had a war with Hanukkah. You have a war with this one, Purim. There's a war. Now we don't have a war with Yom Kippur that we know of right away. But I've named 3-4 already surrounding wars. And we have to understand that while we must use everything, and war is the final frontier. Now, many people in our community like to start off talking war, but you can't start off. You can't start off the war. You have to do your preliminaries. There's a lot of work that had to be done before wars can be carried out. And so, the kind of work that's in here must be taken into account. Now, Mordecai here, he's the hero. Once he learns of this plot by Haman, what he does, he documents it and he sends a record to the Brotherhood. That means all of the leading men in Judeans that live throughout the Persian Empire. He let them know what's going on. He says he's found something out, and he lets them know what needs to be done, and you know how, and so they can take the appropriate action. Now, and these people, you know, they're wise and they know how to get things done. That means they're organized. That's the primary thing that we need to really grasp. So they don't have traitors within them is working in concert with Haman to facilitate destruction of their own people. Now, which is the situation of the black man in the world today. The black man has members of his own clan working against his own family, which, see, in our situation, how we would look at that and apply that to our current time is that we would actually have to deal with the call cleaning house. You can't look at the enemy when your enemy is your own relative, your brother, your mother, your father, and whatnot. You got some more serious problem. You can't look without when the enemy is within your own midst. So you can forget about trying to deal with threats on the outside at this point. You have to make them step B. Step A is clean house. So that's a practical application of looking at how you can the events and the narrative of this this particular drama can be applied to your own life. Now, now Mordecai, the uncle of Hadassah, Esther, which is her Persian name, Ashtar, he had to strengthen her resolve to realize that she was put into the position by Yahweh in order to deliver the people. Because she was about to get, like some of our people do today, they're like, ooh, that's a bad thing. Ooh, I am queen, though. I made it. You know, he didn't remind him, no, this ain't about you. It's not about you getting the easy life. Because these people understood, and so that she didn't take her long to realize that her destiny is connected intimately with the destiny of the people. She is not a different from her people. She's one of them. So if something happened to them, something's going to happen to her. And not just because of the negativity, it's that those are her people and she should care about them. And that she should try to preserve. And everybody's duty in our society is to facilitate the survival of the group. Not like we like to, in today we think about the small group. Okay, I'm going to help my brother, sister, cousin, wherever, and forget everybody else. No. That's not the right way to do it, which is why we are oppressed. Still. And she strengthened herself, and she fasted. She went without food. I think the text says she went without food, and they also, I don't know if she took water, but fast really just requires not eating food. And she fasted for 3 days, but not only did she fast, but she got her friends to fast as well, and they were prayerful. Now the Masoretic version doesn't mention prayer, but Joseph Bar Matthias' version, and I haven't seen the Peshitta version, which I think the Peshitta, which is the Aramaic, literal Aramaic, for it means simple, literal text, her version says that they put on mourning garments, and they refer to eat, to meat and drink. So they didn't drink either. And all delicacies for 3 days' time. And she entreated Elohim to have mercy upon her. That means she was prayerful, and to make her words appear persuasive to the king, and render her countenance, as her face, her complexion, her mood, her expressions, whatnot, more beautiful than they was before, and that both by her words and beauty she might succeed in averting of the king's anger, because of what she would have to do. She would have to go into the throne room without being summoned, which was a death sentence. So she put her own life on the line. How many of you people put your life on the line to save your nation? How many of you would do that? And if you saying that you're not willing to do that, and, why should anybody else do it for you? That's a question you'd have to ask and answer yourself. It's not all like Messiah Yahushua. He laid his life down, not just for all of the good people and the believers, but he laid his life down for the unbelievers and the haters of Elohim, haters of God. So, it's a special strength and resolve that we get to really. And if we don't have it, then we have to develop it. We have to build it. Maybe if you can't build from your own generation, you have to prepare the next generation to be able to have these kinds of abilities, to be able to be strong and bring salvation to your nation. Okay. Now, she did this. It doesn't say which day her fast took place, because that's what I was interested in learning. I probably could figure out doing some in-depth investigation and come up with an approximate time after having read the Peshitta version. I may be able to do that, but I'm still working on my Aramaic, so, and acquiring a text with a Shuri script. But anyway, so she did that, and she was able to let the king know some details, which we won't go into right now, about the matter involving the plot for genocide on her people. And she slowly unveiled it, and at the end, she would reveal it. But anyway, Hadassah she devised a very cunning way. She made a banquet. She made a dinner for this horrible man to come into the presence of the king, and she would expose him. See, this is a woman of the highest, I would say, taste and dignity, how she conducted this. She invited this man over whom despised her. And she made him think, she was just gonna honor him. And at the moment that he thought was his greatest, most successful day in his life, and he was humiliated doing at that moment. And that's a case with pride for people. Let me just go ahead and tell you that. People who think that they are perfect, that they are, they have nothing, there's nothing left for them to do. They have overcome all of their issues. Those people are in the worst position, because that means a fall is imminent. The scriptures tell us that pride arrives before a fall or descent. You go down. Pride. That particular moment when they feel like I've attained perfection, there is nothing else left wanting in my life that I need to accomplish. I am everything that is necessary. I am great. It happened to King Nebuchadnezzar. As soon as his ego, he inflated it out of context, and he said, "This is my grace that I have built this for myself." Like the Pharaoh, the river is mine. I made for myself. Boom. He descends. It's over. He's going down. It's time for destruction. King, who's it? Belshazzar. He thought, "Oh, this empire is awesome. Bring me the vessels and from the archives and from the temple in Jerusalem." And then he got the inscription written in cuneiform, written by hand, Menemenetekel, saying he has been weighed in the balance and been found wanting, and his empire was destroyed that night. He was prideful. As soon as he think that everything's secure, forgot, there's something called white supremacy. They think that they're invincible. They think that this is going to go on forever. They can just kill, rape, and murder the whole planet for all time. They've been doing it so long, they feel that nothing can stop them now. That signifies that means their fall is going to be super hard. Because they just keep getting allowed to build it. But anyway, use that as a practical application to the lesson learned here in the book of Purim, where this Haman is apparently, he thinks he is not at the slightest bit been tipped off that his plan has gone amok. And at this banquet, Hadassah points to Haman in front of her husband, King Ahasuerash. She said, this son of Amandatha by birth, an Amalekite, an alien from the blood of the Persians, who, when he was shown hospitality, entertained by us, and partook of that kindness which we bear to all men to such a great degree as to be called my father and to be worshipped all along. This man was being worshipped by the Persians. And they said how this Haman, he made a conspiracy against, at least this is Hadassah saying, made a conspiracy against me and my life, who gave him his authority by endeavoring to take away Mordecai, my benefactor. This is the king talking. I'm reading in Yosef Bar Matthias chapter, book 11, chapter 6. My benefactor and my savior, my basely and treacherously requiring to have Hadassah depart of my life and of my dominion, brought to destruction. For he contrived by this means to deprive me of my faithful friends and transfer the government to others. See, now there's a footnote right here. These words give intimation as if Ahasuerus suspected a deeper design to Haman than openly appeared, that knowing the Yehudim would be faithful to him, the Kadesh king, and that he could never transfer his crown to his own family, who was an Agagite, or to the posterity of Agag, the old king of the Amalekites, while they were alive, they spread all over his dominions, and he therefore endeavored to destroy them. This is a footnote here on page 364 for Joseph. The point is, Mordecai had saved the king's life. I'm not reading the whole book tonight. And the Yehudim had been very good to the royal family. And this Haman, who was a devil, decided that he was going to destroy all these people who were friends of the king, but the king had overlooked recognizing the kindness that Mordecai and his family had bestowed upon the royal family and the nation at large. And the spirit, Ruach HaKodesh, the spirit of Elohim, came upon him, woke him up out of sleep to read the histories, and he remembered Mordecai on account of that. To bring that to his attention so that as this thing unfolds, he would be able to see the deep malevolence of Haman's plot, which really to overtake the entire nation. But first stroke in that move would be to eliminate the Yehudim. And by this thing and this heroine named Hadassah, named Ashtaroth by the Ashtar by the Persians and Persian nation of Sumerian fertility goddess. She bore that name, and she was instrumental in bringing being in the play and all this. Now, while there's a spiritual dimension, this is the material. These people, Mordecai, Haman, the friends of Mordecai who he sent the letters to, we all play our part in this human drama, this divine drama, in saving a nation, expressing right, saving the world even. That's our job. The theological perspective that we are, or cosmological perspective, wherever that we are just supposed to sit on our hands and wait on the Lord to do everything for us, is destructive. It is trash. We ought to be prayerful, we're going to be fasting, and we're supposed to be active, dynamic participants in the salvation of our people and using the sense God gave us to expand and improve our condition under whatever circumstances. People weren't trying to get out of the Persian captivity because they knew they had been there as a punishment. They dealt with that, but they remained dignified in that. That's why they kept honoring the Most High. They kept doing the feast. They did what they were supposed to do until the time to go. They didn't complain and say, "Oh, God ain't with us because that's why we're here," and throw off their commandments, which would have left them and got them in a position like black folks in America are in today. These people are smarter than us. So we need to get our minds back, get some sense back in our heads. And I hope all of you out there who are interested in looking at this book of Esther and taking these lessons to heart would do so. And I think you would gain much insight and benefit from that. And since this is the last night of Purim, I would recommend some of you check out the Bar Teshuva on the Tribal Family Network. There was a special Purim episode on that network as well. And since it's first day of the week, I bid you all Shabuah Tov and Shalom. Thank you and good night. Layla Tov.